Welcome to part 3 of the second bullet. This is the second episode of The Golden Slipper and Other Problems for Violet Strange by Anna Catherine Green. In the last episode of Violet Strange, she was still sitting there in wide-eyed misery, alternately fondling the little body and drawing back to consult its small set features for some sign of life, when the doctor came. And after one look at the child, drew it softly from her arms and laid it quietly in the crib from which his father had evidently lifted it but a short time before. Then he turned back to her and found her on her feet, upheld by her two friends. She had understood his action, and without a groan had accepted her fate. Indeed, she seemed incapable of any further speech or action. She was staring down at her husband's body, which she for the first time seemed fully to see. Was her look one of grief or of resentment for the part he had played so unintentionally in her child's death? It was hard to tell. And when, with slowly rising finger, she pointed to the pistol so tightly clutched in the other outstretched hand, no one there, and by this time the room was full, could foretell what her words would be when her tongue regained its usage and she could speak. And now, today's episode. What she did say was this.
Is there a bullet gone? Did he fire off that pistol?
A question so manifestly one of delirium that no one answered it, which seemed to surprise her, though she said nothing till her glance had passed all round the walls of the room to where a window stood open to the night, its lower sash being entirely raised.
There! Look there!
She cried, with a commanding accent, and, throwing up her hands, sank a dead weight into the arms of those supporting her. No one understood, but naturally more than one rushed through the window. An open space was before them. Here lay the fields not yet parcelled out into lots and built upon, but it was not upon these they looked, but upon the strong trellis which they found there, which, if supported no vine, formed a veritable ladder between this window and the ground. Could she have meant to call attention to this fact? And were her words expressive of another idea than the obvious one of suicide? If so, to what lengths a woman's imagination can go, or so their combined looks seemed to proclaim, when to their utter astonishment they saw the officer, who had presented a calm appearance up until now, shift his position, and with a surprised grunt direct their eyes to a portion of the wall just visible beyond the half-drawn curtains of the bed. The mirror hanging there showed a star-shaped breakage, such as follows the sharp impact of a bullet or a fiercely projected stone.
He fired two shots. One went wild, the other straight home.
It was the officer delivering his opinion. Mr. Saunders, returning from the distant room where he had assisted in carrying Mrs. Hammond, cast a look at the shattered glass and remarked forcibly,
I heard but one, and I was sitting up, disturbed by that poor infant. Jenny, did you hear more than one shot?
He asked, turning toward his wife.
No,
she answered, but not with the readiness he had evidently expected.
I heard only one, but that was not quite usual in his tone.
I'm used to guns, she explained, turning to the officer. My father was an army man, and he taught me very early to load and fire a pistol. There was a prolonged sound to this shot, something like an echo of itself, following close upon the first ping. Didn't you notice that, Warren?
I remember something of the kind, her husband allowed.
He shot twice, and quickly,
interposed the policeman, sententiously.
We shall find a spent bullet back of that mirror.
But when upon the arrival of the coroner, an investigation was made of the mirror and the wall behind, no bullet was found either there or anywhere else in the room, save the dead man's breast. Nor had more than one been shot from his pistol, as five full chambers testified. The case, which seemed so simple, had its mysteries. But the assertion made by Mrs. Saunders no longer carried weight, nor was the evidence offered by the broken mirror considered as indubitably establishing the fact that a second shot had been fired in the room. Yet it was equally evident that the charge which had entered the dead speculator's breast had not been delivered at the close range of the pistol found clutched in his hand. There was no powder marks to be discerned on his pajama jacket or on the flesh beneath. Thus, anomaly confronted anomaly, leaving open but one other theory, that the bullet found in Mr. Hammond's breast
came from the window, and the one he shot went out of it. But this would necessitate his having shot his pistol from a point far removed from where he was found, and his wound was such as made it difficult to believe that he would stagger far, if at all, after its infliction. Yet, because the coroner was both conscientious and alert, he caused the most rigorous search to be made of the ground overlooked by the above-mentioned window, a search in which the police joined, but which was without any result save that of rousing the attention of people in the neighborhood and leading to a story being circulated of a man seen some time the night before crossing the fields in a great hurry. But as no further particulars were forthcoming, and not even a description of the man to be had, no emphasis would have been laid upon this story had it not transpired that the moment a report of it had come to Mrs. Hammond's ears, why is there always someone to carry these reports? She roused from the torpor into which she had fallen and in wild fashion exclaimed, "I knew it! I expected it! He was shot through the window and by that wretch! He never shot himself!" Violent declarations which trailed off into one continuous wail. "Oh, my baby! My poor baby!" Such words, even though the fruit of delirium, merited some sort of attention. Or so this good coroner thought. And as soon as opportunity offered, and she was sufficiently sane and quiet to respond to his questions, he asked her whom she had meant by that wretch, what reason she had, or thought she had, of attributing her husband's death to any other agency than his own disgust with life. And then it was that his sympathies, although greatly roused in her favor, began to wane. She met the question with a cold stare, followed by a few ambiguous words out of which he could make nothing. Had she said which? She did not remember. They must not be influenced by anything she might have uttered in her first grief. She was well nigh insane at the time. But of one thing they might be sure. Her husband had not shot himself. He was too much afraid of death for such an act. Besides, he was too happy. Whatever folks might say, he was too fond of his family to wish to leave it. The next episode of The Second Bullet will be out next Monday. This production copyrighted 2010 Stefania Lintenbahn. www.stephsvoiceforyou.co.uk.